Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. I'm excited to be joined tonight by Karen Drucker. Welcome, Karen.
Hey, how are you? I'm very good, thank you.
Great, it's great to hear your voice.
Thank you very much, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the air. You know, I've been listening to your CDs for probably several years now, and I'm not sure that everyone who listens to the radio show is as familiar with your music.
Well, that's why I think it's great that you have me on. I appreciate that.
So tell me a little bit about music and spirituality and how those all go together.
And all that soup that it all goes in. Well, you know, it is. It's just a big, wonderful pot of soup because to me it's all part of the same greater thing. It's just, you know, when I write songs, I basically just sort of turn myself over and just get myself out of the way and just say, all right, you know, whatever the muses, spirit, whatever, just come on through. And I'm telling you, there are more songs that I've written that I look back and just go, who wrote that? I can't believe I was, you know, I have the consciousness to write this stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is just, it's that part of me that's coming through to tell me other things. I mean, I learn more from my own songs than anything.
Isn't that wonderful?
I have more people tell me you really should listen to some of your own songs, you know, and take the advice.
Yes. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, my experience with awareness practice is really getting myself present enough to get out of my own way so that I can be there and show up, and that's when the brilliance comes through.
Yeah, and I love it. I just love the process of creativity. That nothing turns me on more. And, you know, I tend to have this fantasy that it's all about that you light candles and you get into this meditative state and all of a sudden, you know, you start writing these wonderful melodies. And, you know, the truth of the matter is a lot of it is just being present, just simply just being present. I can write lyrics on the plane, on the freeway, in gridlock traffic. You know, it's a matter of just being open to having that come through and being present to it. And, you know, I teach a lot of songwriting classes and stuff, and people always say to me, oh, well, you can do this because you've taken lessons or theory or whatever. And the truth is I don't know tiddly-poo. I never have taken any lessons. I don't know how to read music. But what I say to them is it's like I'm just simply present to the words that I hear people say or I hear myself say that I go, ooh, great song lyric. Ooh, great idea for a song. You know, and I'm just aware of it, and I write it down. And that's, you know, that's what makes me a songwriter. Everyone can do this.
Uh-huh. So as we say all the time, it's simply a matter of being present.
That's it. I mean, that's why all this stuff, it's all one big soup because it doesn't matter. You know, I wrote a song recently called All Paths Lead to God, meaning all paths lead to that place of knowing, that place of surrender and allowing. It doesn't matter if you're following a Buddhist path or religious science or unity or whatever it is. It's like we're all going to that place of being still enough to hear that voice, being present, and letting it just open us up to whatever we're supposed to hear. And in my case, a lot of times what I'm hearing are song lyrics and melodies.
Yes, and then you write them down.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah, I love it. And especially for me, a lot of my chanting music is really about the things that voice tells me that's going on for me, that I'm really doing an affirmation around something that's going on that I want to have in my life. For example, I have a song called I Will Be Gentle With Myself. And this came simply from me having a time where I just did something stupid and I'm beating myself up and I'm just, you know, I'm like yelling at myself. And a friend of mine just simply said, would you do this to a child? Would you do this to a baby that's trying to learn how to walk? Just start yelling at it. And I just thought, you know, that's really what it's about. So I wrote this little chant, I will be gentle with myself. And the last line is, and I will hold myself like a newborn baby child. And every time I sing that to myself, I just lighten up. I just get easier with myself.
Yes, I love that chant.
Yeah.
That song. It's very beautiful.
Thank you.
And I have to say, for me, with your music, it just really brings me to tears often. And it's really a feeling of like I'm letting go of some struggle, of some challenge. And with your music, it just really goes straight to the heart, it feels like.
Oh, well, thank you. That's what I'm trying to do, and that's how I write. I constantly put my hand over my heart and say, what do I need to tell myself next? And that's how the next line comes. What do I need to tell myself next? What do I need to hear? And so actually I'm working on an album right now. I have this collection called Songs of the Spirit, so Songs of the Spirit 1, 2, 3, and I'm working on 4 right now. And it's going to be a lot more of a meditative album where it's just going to be deeper, where it's like I'm writing a chant right now of like 10 minutes of simply saying all is well, and I allow and surrender, because that's what I need to hear right now. You know, we're all kind of stressed out with what's happening in the world, and I just feel like I just need to have these messages to myself, and, you know, hopefully it will help other people too, but you never know.
Yes, well, I can vouch for one person, and that's me.
And you and I will chant all is well for hours.
All is well, all is well. That's a great one.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating because, as you have probably experienced, what you need to hear is what all of us need to hear.
Well, luckily, I'm kind of finding that out. I'm always amazed when I do a concert and all these people show up and I'm like, oh, I guess, you know, and they all start singing my songs with me. And
yes.
I guess it is what other people need to hear, but it's a very, I'll be very honest with you and say, it's an extremely selfish act that I'm doing for the most part. I'm really a lot of times speaking to myself, trying to calm myself down or trying to, you know, go through a certain issue and put a chant around it. And, you know, some of my healing songs, I've specifically made some of those for people going through cancer treatments. And I can really, you know, when I focus in on what, you know, I'm thinking that, like when my mom was going through cancer, what she needed to hear, that's how I can write the best, I feel like, because I really get out of my own way. And I just say, what, you know, what needs to be said here?
Uh-huh. So it sounds like what you look for is what do I need to hear? Or if someone is sick, what do they need to hear?
Yeah, and I guess that's what I'm finding with my songs is that obviously, you know, with a lot of my chanting albums that people enjoy that because I think the things that I'm going through are pretty universal, whether they're money issues or self-esteem issues or, you know, just get off your butt and do it issues, you know, whatever it is. You know, I try and do a combination of a lighthearted chanting, you know, or light my songs are a little bit more lighthearted and the chanting is more like just bypass the brain and get into your heart and sing it and have a transformation, hopefully.
Yes, yes, yes. My experience is one of transformation, definitely. And it's interesting, too, because for me, with the awareness practice that I do, I can have a story that it's very selfish. You know, the focus is on me. As you were talking about it, it seems very selfish. And yet, my experience overall is that I'm really sort of more open-hearted and more present and more available to life. And in fact, less selfish than I would
exactly.
be otherwise.
Exactly. Well, and that's what I motivate. That's a lot of what my motivation is that the more that I am, you know, aware of myself and being present to myself, then I'm more present to my partner. I'm more present to my friends. I'm more present to the world. I'm, you know, the good just keeps flowing out all over the place. But it's, you know, it has to start with me being present first in my awareness, and then it just keeps rippling all over the place. So I completely agree.
Yes, yes. Karen, I understand that I'm going to have the opportunity to make my own chant when you and Sherry come to the Palo Alto Zen Center on January 31st.
Yes, I'm thrilled. I'm absolutely
thrilled
because I just adore Sherry to no end. And the fact that we finally have found a date that we can do something together, I'm so excited. And yes, we're going to look at how to make 2009 just be this shining, wonderful year. And the chant that people will come up with is basically, you know, what they're affirming or what they want to have as their little guidepost through the year. And to me, if you put it into music, you remember it. You know, so if you're walking and, you know, you're doing power walking, all of a sudden your chant can be there with you. And, yeah, so it's going to be a very fun, easy process. And you don't have to be a musician or a singer to do it. We're just going to root everything. We're going to ground everything we're talking about that day, and everyone will have their own little chant.
Oh, that's
fun.
Wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. So let me give
you
the dates out again for people. That is January 31st, 2009, about a month from now. Wow, that's coming up. That's at Palo Alto Zen Center, and you can sign up online at livingcompassion.org. Click on the calendar, schedule there, and all the details.
I think people just watching Sherry and I will be just a hoot because we just have a good old time.
Oh, that is absolutely my experience.
Yeah, she's one of my all-time favorites. So the idea of spending all day with her doing this was going to be just a gas. So I'm very excited.
Good, why she's one of my favorites also.
Yeah.
And I have just one anecdote for you, and
yeah.
that is your new Shine CD, which is
mm-hmm.
which I love, and
okay.
I play it in the car with my three-year-old, and we play the title track, and I call it the bouncy song, and it's really just one of those wonderful feel-good songs, and I love the lyrics, and it's just really awesome.
Oh, that's great. And see, I love that the most when I hear the kids or sing along. I understand I've had a few emails from parents saying, I've replaced Barney in their car, and that's a big deal, you know, but they're thrilled because the kids like the songs because they're really easy, and I'm not talking down to them, but the kids and the parents are enjoying it together, so I've had many parents write me and say, thank you so much. I was going nuts with Barney and all these other things, so anyway, that's pretty fun.
Wonderful. Karen, thanks for joining us tonight.
All right, say hi to Sherry for me.
I'll do, and we'll see you in January.
Okay, thanks so much.
Okay, good night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you?
Good, you?
Good. You know, I've been listening to the voices too much, I confess, and doing this radio show is a good antidote to that.
Good. That's what it's supposed to be, huh?
Yes, it is.
Yes, to help us disidentify and come back to center.
Yes.
Speaking of which, you see why I love Karen Drucker?
I know why you love Karen Drucker, yes.
You knew before you talked to her this time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was
Karen
very
Drucker
fun
for
to
a while.
Listen to. Huh?
Yeah, I've loved Karen Drucker for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I want to warn you that I have a bit of a cough.
Okay.
And so periodically, I hope I don't break people's eardrums, but just a warning that it is beyond my control.
Okay.
As is everything. most of the time, you know, it's not a problem. But with this, it could be distressing. So I apologize in advance if it is.
Oh, no problem. And if the listeners hear a cough, it could equally as likely be coming from me as well.
Okay, I'll blame it on you. How's that?
You can blame it on me. Speaking of that cough, I wanted to mention to our listeners who were looking for our regularly scheduled show last week that we were, in fact, sick last week, and that's why we were not here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also that we're not going to have a show next week because we'll be on retreat.
We will indeed. We will be at beautiful Santa Sabina, bringing in the new year. Very much looking forward to that. As you say, you know, now I don't know the source of ammunition that your voices have, but boy, around this time of year, doing anything that brings us back to here, back to center, is just a gift to everybody, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, whether it's doing a radio show or participating in that or doing a retreat or, chanting or singing along with some of Karen's inspiring, remembering kind of music, whatever works for us. It's a gift to us and to everyone around us.
Yes, and I don't know if this is your experience, but I find when conditioning has a big dark cloud over me, that I need almost every moment of my attention occupied with something that will occupy it other than conditioning.
Absolutely.
So
that
good.
Is the case. But I would add something to that.
Oh, tell me.
And that is that, to me, for me, it is that we must be doing that every moment of our lives,
mm-hmm.
regardless of what conditioning is doing.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
You know, the intelligence that animates us has no trouble communicating to us. Now, this is very odd language, and again, I apologize because language, at least the language that's available to me, is not adequate to this conversation. intuitive knowing or intelligence or, the wisdom, love, and compassion that is our authentic nature communicates itself to us easily when we are occupied with something that opens us to it. In other words, I can be, so what you were just talking about with Karen. So I have my little chant of where I want, the life experience that I want. And my attention is focused on that. And that's what I'm doing. I'm singing along, I'm chanting what it is that I want to be the focus of my life. Insight comes through easily. So right in the midst, you know, mid-word, there's a flash of intuition that sends information to me that I need about whatever it is. If I am engaged with conditioned mind at all, even if it's not the dark cloud variety, it's simply that I am giving conscious awareness or unconscious awareness, I'm giving attention to maintaining a conditioned reality. So I could be, it could be as innocuous as thinking about the party that I'm going to go to tonight, or planning a conversation that I'm going to have with a colleague, or whatever. But it's not here. The intelligence that animates us is always imparting that kind of insight to us, but we don't receive it because our attention is with conditioning.
I'm following you.
Okay.
Yes.
So whatever conditioning might be doing or wanting to do in our lives, it's critical that we train ourselves to have our attention where we want our lives to be. And, of course, that's here. What conditioning wants us to think is we have these tools in reserve for when we really need them. So when things get bad enough, I know how to disidentify. But, of course, what that actually does is reinforce conditioning most of the time, and then I use conscious compassionate awareness as an escape hatch when I get in over my head.
Yes.
Yeah? Which is not, it's kind of like only calling your family when you want money.
Yes.
At a certain point, we actually run the risk of not being able to disidentify because we've given too much of our attention and awareness to conditioning.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
So we want to be training ourselves always, even if we're in one of those innocuous little activities like making a shopping list. I don't need to go off into conditioning to make a shopping list. I can make a shopping list as it arises here in the present, as it occurs to me through conscious, compassionate awareness.
Yes. It reminds me of practicing good times and practicing bad times. I just practice. It's what I
do. We just practice. And, you know, as we move toward what I'm describing, it's actually not even practice. It's simply being.
Uh-huh.
Yeah? So we practice to learn to be here. And what we're really saying is we practice in order to come back from wherever we've been to here. But here is what we are. Here is who we are. Because here is a synonym for conscious, compassionate awareness. So as we realize that more and more, then we move from a practice of coming back from elsewhere to authenticity, to simply being, this.
Uh-huh. So instead of practicing coming back to here, we are just being this.
Yes. Just simply life living in this form. Because remember, what we think of as ourselves and what needs to practice is the illusion of a self that is separate from life. And in the beginning, for most people, of course, in childhood, there isn't that experience of separation. But then as conditioning works its magic, there's a greater and greater sense of separation until people become convinced that this false ego identity is who they actually are. It's the real them. And, the brainwashing at that point is pretty complete. So then the practice is trying to find center, first of all, that little gap, that little space between conditioned information, conditioned perception and projection. We find that more and more. We practice coming back, practice being there. We see these little gaps. These little moments where that conditioning isn't going on. We have this growing sense that there's something other than that reality of misery and suffering that I've lived my life in. And so we practice. Now I know that place of center is there, and I'm trying to get back there. But I still believe myself to be an I that is trying to get back to center.
Uh-huh.
And you see, of course, that is a fundamental error. It's a delusion based on having been convinced that I was this artificial structure called egocentric karmic conditioning.
Yes.
So at a magical moment, we slide into an awareness that, oh my God, I think, wait, this is what they're talking about. Oh my God, this is it. This is center. And then, of course, we joke about by the time that we get that sentence formulated and, then we're not there any longer. Uh-huh. But it's that moment of having the experience that we've been looking for. Now we recognize that's who I am. That's what I am. Now I'm practicing finding that, being in that place, getting back to that place. Practice, fast forward, until another magical moment when we realize I live here. I get pulled away from here, out into that false illusion of a separate self. But this is who I am.
It's here.
And, of course, that's when life becomes very, very easy. Because recognizing I got pulled away is not the same as I think this suffering mass of karma is me and I'm trapped here and it's probably hopeless, and I don't really know what people are talking about, and I'm sure even if I knew what they were talking about, it doesn't apply to me because I'm somehow outside of all of that and hopeless and useless and doomed.
Yeah.
That's a very different life experience from who I am is peace, joy, loving kindness, compassion, expansiveness, generosity, patience. That's who I am. And periodically, if I'm not paying attention, my attention gets pulled off into these weird places, and I suffer as a result of it. Now I'm very, very, very committed to not doing that.
Yes.
It's as if every time I open this door, I fall down a flight of stairs into a cold, dark basement. Okay, how many times am I going to need to do that before I realize that's not what I want to do?
Yes.
Yeah. So there we have practice in a few minutes.
Yes, yes. Thank you for that. I think the shock for me, it, as you well know, this process is feeling like I've had several months of expansiveness, open-heartedness, generosity, all of that, deepening practice, and then just feeling like I'm hit out of the blue by a bus.
Yeah, yeah. Which, you know, is a, it's great in the sense that you really get to see the comparison.
Yes.
And you do get to have a sense that your natural state is that expansive place, and what knocks you out of it is being hit by this bus of karmic conditioning.
Yes.
And, of course, what you know very well is what we learn to do, what we're meant to do, is as soon as we realize what happened, we, as the old song says, you know, you pick yourself up, you dust yourself off, and away you go. You don't have a conversation about the bus. You don't need to report it. You know, I mean, we can report it to each other, but you don't need to go into what the heck was that driver doing, or well, why weren't you paying attention, or it's just okay. All right, got flattened. All right, yeah, back in good shape again. Here we go. Now it's a fun image I'm having with Alex. I'm having this cartoon image in my mind of, you know, the bus runs over the person and they're flat, and then they get up and they have to get expansive, right? Yeah. So they have to go from being that flattened figure to puffing themselves back out again, which we do with the breath, right? So we puff ourselves back out again, and now we're expansive, and we're back to who we authentically are.
Yes. I hope Alex is listening.
He's drawing that right now.
Yes. Yes.
Hey, did anybody call us?
We do have two callers here.
All right.
You ready?
Should we talk to them?
Yes. Yeah. Okay, first caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Jen calling from Pennsylvania.
Hey, Jen. How's it going in Pennsylvania?
Well, I'm actually in Florida right now. I'm visiting my mom, so I don't know why.
We don't care how it is in Pennsylvania, do we? We assume they're just fine.
Exactly. Florida is great.
So.
Forgot where I was there. I'm here for the holidays. So. Well, I actually called in a while ago when Melinda was on the show, and have also been trying to look at this in reflective listening. I've been looking at this kind of ongoing situation. It seemed like it was kind of focused on a coworker. I have this job. I just work. It's only one weekend a month, but it's been a good source of torturing from conditioning nonetheless. And it was focused
on... It's
amazing,
isn't
really,
it? It doesn't have to be a big deal. It can be the smallest thing. And conditioning is just avidly interested in turning it into a situation of suffering.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. One thing that I have seen is that I think it's actually something that could also be a source of a lot of joy. I had one weekend where I practiced like crazy and really experienced it as a really joyful, wonderful job. And then ever since then, it's just been slamming me with different stuff. So it was kind of centered on this coworker. I was really projecting onto her, really couldn't stand her, you know, didn't want it to be anywhere near her. And I saw that I have a lot of conditioning around being indispensable, and it felt kind of like I'm supposed to be sort of a lead teacher and she's supposed to be helping out, and it felt like she was kind of taking over and, you know, she could be the indispensable one, and that was really threatening to, you know, for this conditioned pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So that was there, and I've been practicing with that, and I had a few opportunities to be with her outside of this program, and I really am seeing that it's not about her, even though the conditioning, you know, does keep trying to make it about her, and it's amazing. She'll walk into a room, and the voice is just, you know, light into what she's thinking about me and what she's doing and whatever. But I basically set this up with my boss to ask for a couple of weekends to just teach by myself, because I just felt like the conditioning was so strong with this other person that I didn't know what else to do. So I got permission from my boss to not have this person here for a little while, just saying that, you know, I'm a new teacher, I need some time to get confident on my own. You okay?
Yeah, I'm choking to death, but that's okay. I'm fine.
Oh, gosh. Other than that, oh, gosh.
I'm doing great.
I keep my story.
I'm sorry. I can listen. I apologize for the noise.
No, I just feel badly. I'm, you know, but anyway, so I had a couple weekends without her being there, which was helpful because at least it cut out that piece of conditioning. But still, the conditioning has just been, you know, the past weekend I was in my car crying the whole way there, hating myself the whole time, wasn't present because the voices were just telling me how horrible I am at this. And so I don't know. I'm not clear about it, and it's really torturing me. And so I thought I would call and try to put it out there.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing to do. Hang on another second.
Okay.
So here's the deal. Are you in the ongoing email class? Are you doing
that? I am, yes.
Okay. Did you have a chance to look at the class today?
The December? I did not, actually, because I'm with family. I've gotten a little behind in that, but I'm going to try to get to that. So.
Okay. Well, when you get to it, even if it takes you a while to catch up on the other ones, read the one for today, because I'll tell you, it was designed exactly with you in mind, although we didn't know it.
Okay.
And essentially what it says is we were using a situation. So there's a situation. Whatever the situation is. And there are five people there in this circumstance. Excuse me. So what we know is those five people experience the situation in completely different ways. Even if people loosely agree about what happened, once we start talking to them, we realize that they're having completely different experiences. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. So one example is these people went on a weekend, a couple went on a weekend little getaway. And at the end of it, she said, "Wasn't that wonderful?" And he said, "I thought it was awful."
Yeah.
Okay. Now they were both there together
yeah.
the whole time. And that's not an unusual experience. We've all had those kinds of experiences often. And you just kind of look at the other person and go, "Wow. And what we're taught to do, of course, is to decide who's right and who's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But that misses the point completely, because all that's happening is that we miss the fact that when we look out, what we're seeing, this is not going to come as a surprise to you, what we're seeing projected out there is who we are in a karmic sense. So we project out the conditioning that we live inside.
Okay, yeah.
All right? And
yeah.
you're very clear about this, okay? You
yeah.
know you have a karma to need to be indispensable.
Yes.
You know that this other person is threatening that.
Yes.
And, excuse me again, you know that the conditioned response to that is to hate her, want to get rid of her, make her the enemy, make her wrong, then judge you, beat you up, hate you. You know, I mean, it's karma fighting for its life.
Yes.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
So you know that there's no reality in this.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Because somebody else would say, "Oh, well, Jen, that's silly. That's ridiculous. I mean, you're the lead teacher. This person is a support person. Oranges and baseball bats. You know, this is not." Yes.
Yeah, right. I tried to have some of those conversations and realized I need to not probably talk with it, you know, with people who aren't in practice or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's very supportive.
I think that's a very, very good idea.
Yeah,
yeah.
It does
because what you get
is
what, say what?
It does, those conversations seem to encourage, oh, the problem definitely is her. It is that other person. And I know that not actually what's going on. Yeah.
Right. Oh, no. Because, of course, those people that you're talking to are living in the same conditioned reality, different conditioning, but the same conditioned reality that you are in when you're struggling with this.
Yes.
Yeah. So because you understand the mechanism of this, What you know is karma is projecting this so that you will stay in relationship with karma the way it needs you to be in relationship with it to maintain itself. Yeah?
Can you say that again? I think I got it.
Okay. So karma is fighting to keep you in the relationship with it that it needs you to be in with it for it to be able to maintain itself.
Yes, that's absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, simply put, it lives off of your emotion.
Yes.
If you don't get upset, it doesn't have anything to eat.
Okay, yeah.
Okay? So it gives you the view, excuse me, that's going to keep you in the right place to be giving all of your life force to it, which you can see.
Yeah.
You work a weekend, you do this a weekend a month?
Yeah, only one weekend a month.
Yeah, and it's occupying, what, 90% of your life?
Yeah, a lot of time. Yes.
Yeah. So I mean that's I only say that to as an example of what I'm saying. It's able to keep you in relationship with it, focused on it, in conversation with it, almost all of the time.
Yeah.
So here's the good news and the bad news, Jen. Once you know that, there's only one thing to do with it, with that information, and that is to end the relationship. Okay? So I'm in a relationship with this person, a heck of a nice guy, but he gets drunk two or three times a week, and when he does, he beats me up. Now, he doesn't mean to beat me up. It's because he drinks. Okay, and he only drinks because he gets so frustrated with our relationship that he just drinks to forget. Okay, now then I've been going to some classes, and what I get is this is called a battering cycle. This is an abusive relationship. It's not unique to us. It happens to all kinds of people all over the world. Okay? It's got a label. It's got a set of things that go with it that I can go, yep, 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 yep. All right? Now that I know this, I can no longer, I hope, indulge the story that he doesn't mean to, it's not his fault, it's actually my fault, and if I would just be different, then he wouldn't, and I'm sure it's not going to happen again because he feels so bad, and it's going to be all right because we're working it, okay? Because that's all part of the syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Are you following me on this?
I am. I'm with you. Yeah.
Yeah. So what I'm going to be obligated to do is leave that relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, doesn't mean he doesn't go to therapy and I go to therapy and, you know, whatever time in the future we get back together. But right now, we need to call it quits because this is not helping anybody.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's where you are with this karma.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to encourage you not to go to therapy and get back together with it sometime in the future, okay?
Right.
Yeah. This is a permanent break. And now we're back full circle to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show and with Karen and what we talk about quite a lot, which is making the commitment that you have to make to turn your attention to the life situation that you want, to bringing all of that life force back to be available for you, to take care of you, to support you, to nurture you, to enable you to enjoy a perfectly lovely life that you would have if it weren't for this god-awful relationship that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yes, I know that this is what I need to do, and you know, so it seems like it's drop it, turn the attention, which, you know, I definitely can practice with. Whether that other person is there or not, it's the attack on my confidence, and that I don't know the answers, or I don't know what's being asked is still strong. So it's coming up like, is there some truth to that?
Here's the deal, Jen. Did it start with this person? Have you always been a strong, confident person who never second-guessed or doubted herself, and then you ran into this woman in this situation and suddenly your whole confidence has caved? Or...
Oh, no, it's choice. It's right.
Choice
it's been
two.
A lifetime.
That's
yeah,
right.
Choice two.
She's always been in your life. She looked like different people, and she was in different places, but she's always been there. So,
So
the answer is no. There isn't any truth to it. Okay, so what if it's too bad we don't still have Karen on the line, because we could get Karen to help us with a little ditty. But I'm gonna offer one to you, and then your assignment will be to go away and come up with, you know, fine tune this into something that you can actually live with, and then put it to music. Okay, it can be any song you want. Maybe you haven't seen it, but there was a great thing in the December support group where somebody sent in Let It Go, Let It Go, Let It Go to the tune of Let
Actually,
It Snow, Let It
See that one.
Yeah,
that was great, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the kind of thing we're looking for. And it's going to be something along the lines of I don't want to worry about anything else. I just want to have fun with you.
Okay.
All right. However that translates, you know, doesn't matter what's going on. I just want to be happy with you.
Okay.
Can you picture it?
Yeah.
Okay. So
Yeah, I can.
You come up with what that is, and you come up with the tune, and you start singing that, sister.
Okay.
And as I was talking about with Michael a little bit ago, don't wait until it gets bad.
Yeah.
Sing it when you wake up in the middle of the night, sing it first thing in the morning, sing it as you go about your day. Train yourself to just live in that song. Okay?
Yeah.
It's a mantra. It's a mantra, and it crowds out this other useless, suffering conversation, and that's fine. Now, am I going to say that you should live in that for the rest of your life? Absolutely not. But it's a great technique. It's a great... it's a great short-term tool so that you can let yourself feel what it feels like to be happy with you instead of miserable with karma. Now, of course, karma is not going to want you to do this. No surprise
right?
Yeah. And so you do it anyway. You're going to have to do it in spite of it. So it's probably one of those where you may have to record it, you know, singing it for 10 minutes, and then you listen to the recording, and you train yourself. You train yourself to do it against all the resistance.
Okay.
No other way around it.
Yeah, I can definitely work with that. There's still, it's probably just a voice, but there's still this feeling of, but I don't feel that I know what I'm doing enough that I'm, you know, able to answer the questions that people have. And like, do I need to at least do more? Like, I always prepare, but do I need to do more preparation to kind of, you know, silence that voice? Or
No, because those voices, they don't, here's the bottom line. Those voices are not on your side. They're not saying those things so that you'll be successful and happy. They're saying those things so that you'll be anxious and thrown off and look to them for direction.
Okay.
Yeah. So you be yourself. If somebody asks you a question you don't know the answer to, you say, oh, well, gosh, I don't know, but I'll find out before I see you again.
Okay, yeah, because it then launches into you're not qualified to do this, you're, you know, blah, 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 stuff with that. But
it's
the voice. That's where I don't indulge that conversation. Yeah, yeah.
No, because it's not saying that. Now, again, who would you say that to? Who would you say that to? So you go up to somebody and you ask them a question and they say, oh, gosh, I don't know. Wouldn't it be wonderful in the first place if people would actually say that instead of just making up some horse pucky and passing it off as gospel because their ego can't stand the fact that somebody's going to know that they don't know everything in the world. Okay, so you ask somebody a question and they say, oh, gosh, I don't know. And you say, well, then you're not qualified to be doing what you're doing.
Right, yeah,
kinda
I
hard,
would not, okay.
Yeah, kind of hard to picture, isn't it?
It is hard to picture. That's how I'm looking at it that way, yeah.
So that's a little test that you can always run, okay? You know, think of a little nine-year-old and try it out on that little kid, you know? When the voice says something, you say, okay, wait, now you could be right. And then turn around and say it to this little nine-year-old kid. If you don't want to say it to that nine-year-old kid, you know it's self-hate, it's bogus, say bye-bye.
That is a great test, yeah.
Yeah, put your fingers in your ear and just start singing.
Okay.
All right,
well,
let us know.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's wanted me to quit this job and everything else, and I'm so glad that I'm sticking with it and practicing, so thank you so much for your help.
You are so welcome. Happy holidays.
You too. I hope you feel better. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye, Jen.
Bye, Mike.
Bye, Jen. Thanks for joining us, Jen. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to have a break for one of our sponsors here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry,
Michael, congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you.
Very well done.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. For somebody tuning in for the first time, it's been a long time since technology has allowed us to hear the voices of our actual sponsors.
Yes.
The actual voices of our sponsors, I guess I should say.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, great.
Yeah.
Sherry, we have two more callers here.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Pam.
Hey, Pam.
How are you?
I'm well. I'm good. If I can, you know, if I can keep my grip on my lungs here.
Yeah, that doesn't sound too happy.
It doesn't, does it?
No.
What's going on?
I'm very confused about something. I'm sorry. I'm getting upset. Give me a minute. I've been sitting for several years, but it seems like I never get it right. I had something pretty heavy happen to me, and I actually, this is kind of funny, I actually, things got so bad in my life that I actually had like 3 months of what you were talking about earlier with Michael, and I can't seem to get back there, and I can't seem to make that the center. And so I tried a lot of things, and I went away to do this course. It was like an eight-month course with, and it had 3 weekends where we got together, and at the second one, even during meditation, I was crying, and one of the assistants took me aside and told me that I should stop with what they were doing, and they actually sent me home because they told me that I was hypervigilant and not aware. So now I'm really confused because they told me what I was doing wasn't good for me. They insisted that I go get some help and that I fix what's wrong. So now, of course, I have confirmation that I'm doing it wrong. So feeling totally invalidated, I even went to a therapist who told me what I was experiencing was trauma from my childhood. Big surprise, right? And he also asked me to stop sitting until I knew what I was doing. But working with him made me feel worse and worse. There was like a lack of clarity, and things that happened felt like they constantly triggered me, which of course was then again blamed on me and not maybe something he was doing. And so I don't know what I'm doing wrong, and I'm really confused. And I sit all the time and try to be compassionate with myself. And sometimes I have these little breakthroughs, but it always gets overwhelming again. And I'm wondering if you could tell me the difference between hypervigilance and compassionate awareness and what I can do to understand that I'm doing it right. I guess that's...
Well, Pam, here's the thing. Here's the deal. Have you done the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat?
No. But I'm so familiar with all your books, and I read that one all the time.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I took it to my therapist, you know, and I told her, sometimes I feel like when I'm in therapy that I'm actually reinforcing that there's something wrong and there isn't anything wrong, and so I'm really confused. I just get myself in these binds, you know.
Okay. Well, I will tell you that doing the retreat is not the same as reading the book.
Okay. But, you know, that's what I went to, this eight-month retreat, 3 retreats, and, you know, all of this help, and then they told me I was hypervigilant.
Yeah. They're not me.
I know they aren't, Sherry.
They're not us.
I keep coming back to your books all the time.
I know you do. Now, so that's number one. Because, you know, the thing that I like best about, well, the one of the 10,000 things I like best about Zen practice is that you are required to be your own authority. Now, that's not to be confused with you're to look at the false authority inside your conditioned mind and listen to it tell you to make bad decisions. But there's very big difference. What you're taught to do is get to center so that you can actually get a sense of what's going on, and then encouraged and guided to practice that over and over and over so that you can learn for yourself how to go to that place of compassionate acceptance and to embrace the incarnation that we call Pam into that.
So I could be able to differentiate between...
You sure could. Now,
okay.
here's my favorite line on confusion. Do you know the Sherry Huber line on confusion?
No.
Confusion is what happens when we look to conditioned mind for clarity.
Yes.
Yeah? So I project that that's what's happening to you. You find yourself in these circumstances. Somebody says something to you, throws you off, and as with just about everybody else on the planet, where you look to try to figure it out is your conditioning. And your conditioning, of course, is not really invested in you doing well and being free of it. You get a sense of that?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's almost like something I know, but, you know, when you have nothing but your logic, there's other things that I see glimpses of. There's even something that happened where I was there for months. But if I can't cause that to happen, and it seems like it just comes by grace, I don't know how to use that part of it. I only know how to use my logic.
But Zen awareness practice to the rescue, because it can teach you not how to make that happen, but how to put yourself in a place where you are open to that happening.
Yeah, I understand.
You see the difference?
Understand. Yes, I do, but for some reason I haven't been able to create that.
That's right, you can't.
No, create the space even. I seem to keep the other is just it's so overwhelming, especially like when you go somewhere where you're expecting to actually learn these things and they're telling you, yeah, there's something wrong with you,
But that's fine. You know, you're a girl. You know about kissing frogs.
Well,
right?
Yeah. And I got to tell you, I've seen 3 therapists since then trying to actually get a sense, and it's like, I don't think these people are right, but I do have some childhood trauma where it's still telling me that I need to fix myself and I'm never going to get okay even in meditation until I'm
now,
fixed.
You know what, Pam? If we were in a room full of people, if we were at a retreat, what I would do now is I would ask everybody in the room, how many of you who hear the messages that Pam has just articulated, how many of you hear that same message? And every person in the room would raise their hand. That is standard, garden variety self-hatred.
Yeah.
It's classic. People don't even have to look I get messages like that, but what I hear is, I mean, it's the same language.
Oh, listen, I recognize it. I'm not disputing what you say. I know what it is, but that doesn't mean that I've been able to do anything about it, I guess.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And that's why we have a practice.
Well, and that's kind of why I guess I buy into a thing, you need to do EMDR and handle this trauma, because somehow I just can't seem to do it like other people. Other people seem to be able to do this thing that I can't do.
Now, you're hearing the voices.
I'm tongue in cheek. Saying that because that's what's going on all the time.
Sure.
A lot of times I'm stuck in it and I don't recognize it. Right.
That's right. That's exactly how it works.
Yeah.
That is exactly how it works, which is why we do a practice. And practice consists of participating in things that teach us how to see, teach us where to look, what to look for, how to recognize it when we stumble across it. Okay?
So this
we practice.
Even going to a retreat, I feel like I'm at this point, only because it's just so far down trying, I even feel like then making that is reinforcing that there's something wrong. I mean, I'm really in a bind here, and I'm trying.
You're in a bind as long as you choose to look to your conditioned mind as the authority.
Okay, so what authority?
I go to retreats, Pam. I go to retreats constantly. I don't think there's anything wrong with me.
Okay.
I go to retreats because they fill up my heart, because they remind me who I am, because I get to be with other people who also value being in the present, feeling their heart open, moving to a place of gratitude and generosity.
Yeah.
The Buddha taught us to live with Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha, the 3 jewels. There's awakening, enlightenment. Yeah. Okay. There is that. There's the practice that we do to find that and to live within that once we realize it. And there's Sangha, the people that we practice with, our community. Because we cannot do it alone in isolation. We cannot. Buddha said so.
Well, it's not like I've never gone to a retreat, but I've never had the experience you're talking about, and I always feel like I'm going there to learn something to maybe help me fix this, you know? And I need another way to think about it.
Yes, you do. You absolutely do. Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting that you've read all of the books that I've written, but you've never been on retreat with us.
Never. One of the reasons is exactly what I was just saying. You know.
Can you just take a second though to let that in? Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with you. Has meant so much to you.
It has.
But you didn't do that retreat. You did these other things instead. Now I'm not saying this in a way that. Oh yeah, I should feel really bad about that because that.
No,
was
no,
really...
I actually hear what you're saying. It's like something self-sabotaging.
Uh huh.
It's like the runner in your book, the person that tells you to put on anything and go out and run.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you follow that. You follow that. You and it's not indulgence. You know, you're not looking for people who just say, oh yeah, like we were talking with Jen. Jen knows. You know, you don't just talk to people about issues who will say, oh, yeah, you're right. It's not that. It's people who really care about you and want to help you get to that place inside yourself that you can see in others and that others can see in you, that place of authenticity and goodness. And what sabotages us from doing that, of course, is the same egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hatred that we're up against all the time. It's a powerful force.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you think I can learn what it is I'm attempting at one of these retreats?
I think, first of all, I think if you let go of that language, let go of framing it that way, there's nothing to learn. Okay, there's nothing to learn. What you can experience is that there's nothing wrong with you. Once you experience that, you know, we get into the sports analogies. It's like that moment when you hit the perfect tennis shot. Okay,
yeah.
You go, oh, my God, that's it. Oh, okay, all right, now I know where I'm going. And then, and you said that you've had an extended period of time of that sort of well-being.
Yes,
then,
I don't know why it came or why it left.
That's right. And then you begin a practice of returning to that place, opening yourself to returning. And it's a process. It's a process.
Mm.
Now, one of the things, this could be seen as kind of tangential, but I'm going to offer it to you anyway. There is a person in the world who I worked with for a number of years, actually, and then chose to go off in another direction. And what I worked with her on is this. She has had, spontaneously, a powerful awakening experience. It just turned her entire life upside down. She was joyful, blissful. Everything was wonderful. Life was perfect. Okay. It happened for a period of time, and then it went away.
Uh-huh. And I know it.
What she did with that was allow it to ruin her life because all she wanted was to feel that way again. Now, what I told her and encouraged her toward, and I think was the cause of her leaving, was that many, many people, the vast majority of people, almost everybody who is born, will never have an experience like that for even a moment. What is possible is for us to be grateful for what we have received instead of bitter and angry and resentful that we're not given more.
Okay, I don't feel those things, bitter, angry, resentful.
No, but you could.
Yeah. Well, okay, well, that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
I just know that I suffer a lot, and that when that happened, I felt more like myself, and like,
yes,
maybe like when I was a child, than I felt at other times. And it's kind of like, why can't, you know, because I know that was more natural. Why can't I be more natural instead of, you know, what is this getting in the way? And
do you want me to give you about a one-sentence answer to that question?
Well, something is.
Do you
want to
know what? Do you want to know what it is?
Okay.
Your relationship with conditioned mind.
Yeah. Well, I figured that. That's kind of, yeah. That's,
no,
I mean, the one-liner, yeah.
Yeah. So,
and
you
so
can,
is there a way to change that relationship? Is, I
the way to change right. that relationship is to turn your attention to where you want your life to be.
But that's not really positive thinking. It's just.
It is not positive thinking.
Okay.
It is because it is no thinking. Okay. So if it's, is there somebody you love unconditionally?
Oh, my son, yeah.
Your son?
Yeah.
Okay. And how old is your son?
37.
Okay. So think of your son when he was a year?
Yeah.
6 months?
Yeah.
Okay, you ready? All right. Mm-hmm. So you think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And after the show is over, go sit down in a comfy place, get a cup of tea or whatever, and spend about 5 minutes thinking about him from the moment of birth until he was a year old.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Feel what that feels like inside of you.
All right.
Mark that. Okay? Ground yourself in that.
Mm-hmm.
And then practice coming back to that feeling. It's like, it can be like a little crutch. Okay? At first, you'll do it through thinking about him. Okay? You'll think about him and you'll be able to feel that feeling. As you progress, you'll be able to feel that feeling without thinking about him.
Not everything that was going on at the time, just him, right?
Just him.
There's always these associations, even when he was born, there was a lot
of
things.
Yeah, but you don't go there.
Okay.
You think about him, about how he looked, about how he smelled, about how he felt.
About how
he
smiled back at me when I played with him.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right, how he put his little hands up and wrap them around your finger,
yeah,
and his little hands on your face. Yeah, okay, you go there.
Uh-huh.
You feel what that feels like inside
uh-huh.
of you. You practice going there. You practice it. You can feel it. There's that expansive, heart open, filled with love, receiving, grateful, okay? That's the place that you're going. You feel yourself going there. You feel yourself going there. Pretty soon you practice going to that place when you see a flower. When you see a bird fly
I can do this on my hammock sometimes. And
that's
the
right.
nature's around me and the birds land, and I just go into this place. But
that's
it doesn't
right.
last,
okay.
It doesn't last long, yeah.
But
okay.
But it doesn't last long because you turn your attention away.
I have
because
to catch
you
myself.
give your attention back to conditioned mind. What
I don't
you're
know how
practicing,
I'm doing that, Sherry.
Huh?
Yeah. I don't know how I'm doing that.
What you're doing is turning your attention away from that expansive feeling to conditioned mind to a conversation about what's wrong and what's missing.
And,
just notice
and when
that.
And when I notice it, don't do anything with it, just notice it.
You notice it and you turn your attention away from that and bring it back to that feeling.
Or if I can't get that to my son as a child, or
that's right. You use him as your bridge until you can get there on your own. Until you can just feel that love without needing to think about anything. You can you just feel it. It's animating you. It's who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Every time your attention is drawn into that conversation, Why am I doing this? What about that? Why?
Yeah.
Okay. You turn your attention away from that. You bring it back to where you want your life to be. Now, your assignment is you're going to do that for, what, 2 weeks?
Okay.
I think Michael said no show next week because we're at, on retreat. And then the week after that, report back, okay?
Okay.
And,
so what we,
and make
so
your plans for that. Make
that's
your plans
week-
for that. There's nothing wrong with your retreat.
Okay, so you're going to be here on the air again 2 weeks from now?
I believe so.
Okay. I'll just check in and see.
Pam, you know what? We do need to check in because I leave for Zambia on January 4th and don't get back till the 18th. So, but I will endeavor to have one of the monks on, and they are totally dialed into this conversation. They've heard us. This is what they practice. This is what they're experts on. So you can report back to one of them and get the same encouragement.
So let me ask you, am I wrong in thinking that going to therapy that I don't really feel is helping is probably just reinforcing that there's something wrong with me? Or,
well, you know, I don't really have an opinion about that other than if something doesn't feel like it's helping you, there's no sense in doing it.
I know, but you know what I always hear from psychologists is things like, well, it doesn't happen all at once.
It doesn't. But you've got this little program, so give this little program a chance. Look into that there's nothing wrong with your retreat. After you do this for a little while, then see where you are with therapy.
Yeah, okay. That's a good plan. I'll do that.
All right.
Okay.
Take good care of yourself.
Thank you so much, Sherry.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Pam. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Don't you just love people?
I do. I do. They are endlessly dear.
Endlessly.
Yes.
Beautiful and dear. Yep. Worth fighting for.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we must keep fighting for them.
Yes, and for ourselves.
Yes, starting with ourselves.
starting with myself.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And to me,
thank you, Michael. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, to me, what's so beautiful about that is that when I do fight for myself in that way, it really extends to everyone else.
Yes. It's what you started out talking about with Karen. You know, it we're told that it's selfish.
Yes.
We're told that focusing on ourselves in this way, taking care of ourselves, bringing compassion to ourselves is selfish. It's the most unselfish thing we can do.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then it's just available for everyone and everything.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sherry. We have two callers still on hold here, and unfortunately it's after 6. And
so they will be on with the next show that we're on the air with one of those fine monk people.
Yes, which will be 2 weeks from today.
All right.
Great.
Thanks,
Sherry.
Michael. Good night.